Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.
Time for FMR's Not the Daily News here on Classic Business, brought to you by 10X, an asset manager that delivers superior returns and an authority on wealth creation. 10X your future. The Reserve Bank prolonged its most aggressive interest rate hiking cycle in at least two decades today, hiking by 75 basis points. It really just underlines its commitment to tame high inflation, even as the economy is flirting with recession. The median of 19 estimates in a Bloomberg survey of economists was all for a 75 basis point increase. So one can say that this was pretty well guided to the market. At least the communication by the SARB is hitting the mark. We did see, though, three members of the committee preferring the announced increase, while two preferred a 50 basis points increase. So some of the doves are starting to coo inside the Black Tower. And repo rate, here's a bit of useless trivia, is short for repossession rate, the rate at which the banks repossess assets that you bought on loan. We obviously borrow at prime, which is about 3.5% higher than that. Well, I'm joined now by 10X CEO Anton Esser. Anton, welcome. No real surprise in the quantum there. What stood out for you in the commentary?
Yeah, I mean, it was very balanced, I think very predictable, and actually sometimes in life predictability is a good thing. So you know, the RAND didn't move really at all, and I guess they achieved that. I mean, it was relatively balanced. They talked about kind of risks to the upside from an inflation perspective, but then they were also relatively downbeat in terms of their GDP forecast going into 2023. So I guess through that, they can almost say, look, we're focusing on inflation, but we're also kind of very aware of what's happening in terms of the overall economy. So they're kind of trying to almost go down this middle road of we need to kind of control inflation, but we're very aware of the impact of tightening. So I think it was as balanced as you're going to get, Michael, in terms of what they delivered.
What really is concerning is their outlook for economic growth, because we know we are facing headwinds globally with the world likely to go into recession next year based on consensus views of what the Fed is doing. And if you look at what's happening in Europe, the US, and also what's happening in large parts of Asia, it'll be very difficult to avoid a global recession. So those are pretty big macro headwinds. And if you look at our own local issues, load shedding and obviously rising interest rates and the impact that that has on consumer demand, you look at the GDP forecasts, they're now down next year from 1.4% to 1.1%, and then the following year down from 1.7% to 1.4%. So ultimately, we are in a low growth trap still, despite all of the economic reforms that we're seeing. I mean, it just shows you the kind of dilemma that the Reserve Bank is stuck in.
No, I mean, they're in an impossible situation. I mean, in the end, you know, we all know how difficult things have been over the last few years. I mean, in a sense, we've been in a recession for the better part of 3 years. But if you look at GDP per capita, it's been negative. And in the end, that's actually what a recession is. I know there are lots of technical descriptions of this, but in the end, if the economy isn't growing enough based on the size of the population growth, then in a sense, it's a recession. So, and in a recession, you should really be trying to stimulate the economy. And here we are, 350 basis points worth of increases over this year. As you mentioned, the prime going up above 10%, now 10.5%. It's adding to, an incredibly difficult environment for the consumer. It's on the top of load shedding, it's on the top of food and energy prices. Actually, higher interest rate costs ultimately is another squeeze on discretionary spending. So, but the reality is, unfortunately for our economies, we have no option. Because in the end, if we ran and we went the opposite direction and we actually ran a looser policy, which actually we do need, our currency would take the pain. The currency takes the pain and you have more imported inflation. So in a sense, we are really at the mercy of what happens globally. So if we kind of look into 2023, it's not really what happens here domestically, which is important. It's actually what actually happens in terms of where inflation goes over the next 12 to 24 months, which will determine how much further we have to go.
So on that point then, Anton, and I've been looking at leading indicators. You look at shipping rates, you look at these things that start to indicate the direction generally of inflation globally. You look at where the oil price has trended over the last few weeks. Where do you see inflation heading over the course of 2023, which will hopefully give the Reserve Bank some space and some breathing room to start reining back, at least feathering the accelerator, maybe even cutting towards the back end of next year? That's probably the most optimistic forecast we've got.
Yeah, I mean, I know we've discussed this in previous calls. And so it's really more you know, what are we observing as opposed to forecasting? And if you look at the US, you know, CPI there peaked in June. And in fact, actually, if you look at really what's happened since then over a rolling 3-month period, it's actually slowed to, you know, just over 2% on an annualized basis. So, and what's really more important, and this is where, unfortunately, economists and monetary policy gets it slightly wrong, is that it's very backward-looking in a sense that, you know, tightening rates effectively impacts the future, but you're looking at a lagging indicator, which is inflation over the last 12 months. So what you need to really therefore look at is the momentum, the trajectory. And the momentum, you mentioned a couple of factors there, you know, for example, the Baltic Dry Index around shipping at a relatively almost a new low. And a lot of these global supply pressures have eased. And we have this massive squeeze on consumers. So yes, everything really is pointing here towards, you know, disinflationary 2023. And then, you know, really what we kind of are at now is very close to the peak in this cycle. Now, anything can happen, like we had this year with Ukraine. So, you know, we could have another scare in terms of energy costs. You know, obviously food prices are a worry. So anything can happen, but just removing aside kind of those kind of black swan events, you've got a disinflationary trend, which will lead to a peak in rates quite soon. And actually, the real question is how deep is this recession going to be in 2023? Recession is very widely expected. It's probably the most flagged recession I've ever experienced in my career. So everyone, you know, 80% of professional investors know this is happening. And when generally when everyone agrees, something different's going to happen. But, you know, in this case, I think the question really is the extent of the slowdown. And that is really what will determine what happens with interest rates and financial securities in 2023. So.
And this is where I guess we need to start whipping out our cutlery and condiment forecast, because I've heard all kinds of things from wok shape to bowl shape to V-shaped recessions. But that is the big question, isn't it? Is it going to be short and sharp? Is it going to be shallower, maybe longer to get out of it? And that really is where it becomes a little bit more difficult to, based on the current data, observe exactly how we're going to emerge from where we are currently. But maybe we can just look at a little bit closer to home what the implications of all of this are for South Africa's bond market going into 2023, because it's the one, and you spoke of consensus, it's the one area where I found a lot of consensus this year on the show, and that is South Africa's bonds are offering real value and have been a real haven through the last 2-3 years of COVID and then geopolitical storm. How do you see this impacting South Africa's bond market going into next year?
Well, if we follow through that logic that we discussed in terms of, you know, global inflation peak and disinflation, and we put aside kind of political risks, and obviously we have the grey listing, which is a factor, but just kind of putting aside kind of the political risk around it and just looking at it from a more of a pure economic perspective. You know, SA government bonds 10 years at 10.7%, and importantly, you know, real yields. So this is the kind of the nominal yield versus the break even. So it's at 4.6%, and depending on where you are on the curve. So this is it. And that is actually kind of globally probably the most attractive real rate on offer in global markets. So, and I know we've discussed this before, but it really screams, you know, value. And if you look at it in a historical context about how well, you know, we've managed monetary policy, and this kind of consistency around, you know, focusing on inflation, focusing on being incredibly, careful with the way we manage the local economy, both from a fiscal and from a monetary perspective in recent years, you know, to have a yield of 10.7% with a real yield of 4.5%, it's a very attractive market. So I think it remains that. I think it's a good place to be if that view plays out. The key risk, which we all know, is that if we do have a major shift from a political perspective or something changes there, but, you know, not that I'm a political forecaster, but that's, you know, is looking unlikely at this stage. So, you know, we are as a business over the long-term basis, remember, we're very long-term investors and looking out over that 5-year horizon, you know, holding 10-year securities at that type of real yield is very attractive from our perspective.
Yeah, very difficult to argue against that. I mean, and while I'm no political sage or forecaster either, and who knows what may happen into the ANC elective conference, I'm very encouraged by what I've witnessed just this week, with the president being the first official head of state being invited by the new king of England to visit on a state visit. It really is optically very good for South Africa. I don't think we can downplay how important that is from a diplomatic and geopolitical and geoeconomic perspective. And he seems to be doing all the right things. Some people may quibble about the pace of reform, but I would quite happily take another 6 or 7 years of Cyril Ramaphosa into 2030, given the context that you've just sketched out. Anton, we're going to have to leave it there. It's always a great pleasure getting your insight into these things and the longer-term big-picture perspective here on Classic Business. Take care.
Thank you, Michael.
That was Anton Esser, Chief Investment Officer at 10X with FMR's Not the Daily News on Classic Business, brought to you by 10X Investments, an asset manager that provides investment solutions that deliver superior returns. 10X your future. Listen to Not the Daily News on FMR's Classic Business next Thursday, just after 20 to 7. 10X, an industry thought leader and expert. To 10X your future, visit www.10x.co.za.
Classic Business with Michael Avery, sponsored by Alex Forbes, for insight, advice, and impact.